live from New York City, it's The Gary Noel Show. And now, your host, Gary Noel.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noel, and I'd like to welcome you to our program. Broadcasting live and video streaming live from our studios in New York City, you can watch by going to GaryNoel.com or ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. Today, what's the secret to living past 110? I'll share that with you. Also, we're going to look at the idea of keeping Americans so fearful of terrorist attacks that an entire cyber industrial complex, that's brand new, you've heard of the military industrial complex and the pharmaceutical industrial medical complex, now there is the cyber industrial complex. And they are involved in hundreds of billions of dollars in contracts. And yet they don't do diddly squat to actually keep us safer. And I'll get into that. My guest in the second part of our program will include Scott Tipps and Jonathan Emord, someone you haven't heard from, and also Dr. Annie Kalajayan. She's a board-certified expert in traumatic stress, and she will tell you, if you'd like to come this Thursday, I'll be the keynote speaker at the United Nations conference, and ameaningfulworld.com is the website. She'll tell you what it's about and if there's room. I don't even know. We'll talk to her. Jonathan Newmore, by the way, and Scott Tipps are two of the leading lawyers in America fighting the FDA and fighting for your freedoms of choice. We'll talk to them once again about why we need to pay attention to the regressive policies of federal agencies. And for those of you who are still living with this notion that, well, in order to get us back on track, let's just have the government create more jobs. But it doesn't work. Or to eviscerate existing social programs. That surely doesn't work. So let's take a more measured look at what happens when you're not paying attention and bureaucracies grow so large and are so easily manipulated by special interest groups, they serve their interests, not ours. I'll talk about that. And Luann Panessi will be here to share what you've been asking, and we'll take a couple questions from her. Let us begin. I've spent my entire adult life in anti-aging research, anti-aging medicine. I've conducted more than 47 clinical studies on human beings, probably over 30,000. The results have been published and presented before scientific bodies. One thing I've noticed with all this is that in order to live a longer life, you have to live a happier life. After traveling all over the world during a five-year period to examine cultures that were living long lives, and they did some things that were healthy, that were self-evident, and some things that were not, like the Italians and the French and the Spanish smoke a lot, and people in some countries drank a lot of espresso, lots of caffeine. In South America, they chewed on coca leaves up in the mountains all the time, all day long. In other cultures, they had very unhealthy meals, but they were very physically vigorous, especially those living in the higher altitudes in the Himalayas. And I'll be visiting the Himalayas, and I intend to broadcast live from the Himalayas in September. I'll also be doing work on the 12 tipping points. I want to film and then stream live and show you what I'm looking at in real time. And I will have a farmer walk from his home to where he used to get the water for his animals and his family. And then we'll show you in just 5 years how far he has to walk today. Over a mile. Whoa, that is a big loss of ice and snow, and hence water. Then I'm going to go from the top of the Himalayas, where all these glaciers are, and I'm going to take you there, and you'll see it. And then I'm going to go down into the different rivers, and I'll show you the Mekong Delta, and I'll show you the Ganges, and I'll show you the Yellow River. I'll show you all the rivers that feed China and India and Vietnam, all that area of the world, and what's happening to them. If I tell you that you've never seen anything like 400 million people don't have running water. Well, what do they do each day? Where do they go to the bathroom? Well, anywhere they want, right outside. Our culture just can't wrap its mind around how the rest of the world lives, but if you don't give these people the tools to have a quality of life, then they have to survive by any means possible. You'll see people bathing in water, and then you're going to see me take a sample of that water right beside a holy man. I'm going to take a sample of that water, and I'm going to have it tested within 24 hours, and I'll show you what's in it. I'll show you, there's a special lens I have that will show you what a microscope sees. And you'll see the water bubbling. Well, that's not bubbling because natural mineral springs. That's bubbling because of methane from human excrement. Where do you think 16 million people's evacuations go each day? Into that very water. The very water people wash their clothes in? Yes. Bathe in? Yes. Drink from? Yes. Bury their dead in? Yes. Where's the water filtration plants? Oh, they don't work. So in this trip to India and the Himalayas and to China and Vietnam and all the other places I'm going for this film, specifically, this film is, well, there's actually two films, one on genetic engineering, the other's on global warming, just to show you one of the tipping points, just one. The other's going underneath, which is a little hairy, but getting in a tiny little submerging vessel like a submarine and going underneath the glacier tips that go into the ocean and see how far down you go, then come up on the other side where you go into cavities and you see that the warming water underneath is causing humongous cavitation underneath. It's breaking off the icebergs where we don't even see it. That's causing the oceans to rise. So all this is, I'm going to try to get you this in real time so you see what's going on. Anyhow, when I travel around the world, I'm always asking people about what they do and trying to spend quality time each day going through a day with them. What time do they get up? What do they eat for breakfast? How they start the day? When do they break for lunch? What do they have? Do they have another meal in the day? What time do they go to bed? What do they talk about? What songs do they sing? What's the relationship with the different members of their family and their neighbors? All these constitutes an outsider's view of what it is to, at least to the degree you can, get a handle on another culture. So when I came back after going all over the world, I did a chart. And the chart showed that if you took every vitamin and mineral and herb necessary, you could add about 10% onto your aging, meaning you'd live longer by 10%. If you ate good quality foods, I mean great foods, lots of juices and lots of fruits and vegetables, legumes, pulses, roots, garlic, all the good foods, the superfoods, that could add about 15% onto your life. So eating right and taking the supplements is 25%. The average American is around 4% out of 25. Then you have to look at exercise. I'm talking about daily exercise, both resistance and aerobic. Not overdoing it, not underdoing it. That adds on about 15%, 10 to 15%. But then stress management, being able, when things get rough, to be able to stop for a moment, go to neutral and say, okay, this doesn't feel good. I don't like what's happening, but I don't want to overreact, and I don't want to have a double negative, something negative happening, and then I respond negatively, so it's a double negative. Because cortisol and epinephrine and adrenaline are just going to rise and my blood sugar is going to rise, all of which are bad. So if you can do meditation, prayer, writing, having a pet, loving a pet, going for a walk in nature, sitting by a waterfalls, any of the thousands of things that we can do, even singing, all of that de-stresses us. That's about 10%. So now look at what we've got. We've got the environment we live in. That's anywhere from 5 to 10%. Keeping it clean, keeping it creative, changing it, having your own input, all that's very important. So now if you did everything you could at the high end of quality, you're at about 60%. Well, that still leaves 40%. And what I notice is that people in the world were taking no supplements, zero, were not eating great food, didn't always exercise they should, and sometimes their environments were not healthy, and yet they were living longer lives. So clearly in the West, we had missed something. And what I found that something was happiness. And knowing who a person is, knowing yourself, your authentic self, not your conditioned self, and being able to live in balance and authentically is 40%. And I came to that when I understood, when I was growing up, there was a school teacher named Mrs. Hendricks, and she was a really big woman. I'm going to suggest she's around 6'2", and she was the best teacher I ever had. She also lived just down the block from where we lived, and I would always be going over there asking her things. And she always had joy in her answers. She lived a long life. There was a woman who lived down the street from me, and she was, I don't know if she was ever married or her husband died. You just didn't get divorced where I grew up. But she had a backyard that was just magical. It was like a Shakespearean garden where everything was growing. Aromatics, there was a beehive in the back, butterflies were everywhere. And she would sit on the swing and she would drink tea, including sassafras tea, with honey in it. And I would sit there as a young boy on that swing. And every time I looked over at her, she was always smiling. And I said, and clearly it was an inappropriate statement, but I was a kid. I said, "Are you afraid of dying? Because you're older." And she looked at me and she said, "No, I'm not afraid of dying." And I said, "Why not?" And she said, "Because I am so enjoying living." And that stuck with me. I was always curious about everything. I mean, I'm the little goofball in the middle of church once. I held up my hand. Of course, this embarrassed my mom, and everyone says, "Sit down, Gary. Shut up." And I said, "I have a question." And the minister looked at me and, you know, said, "Yes, Gary." And I said, "A preacher, if Adam and Eve are white, where'd black people come from?" And then suddenly you could hear the shiver going around the room like, "Blandino, why don't you beat him once in a while, just on general principles?" But I was curious. I mean, if you're a seven-year-old boy and you're curious about everything, and my mother said, "If you've got a question, ask it. If you're curious about something, find the answer." I needed to know things. I needed to know, where do you go when you die? Is that it? Is it over? No. My mom would say, "That's not over. That's just the beginning of the next stage." And so when I remember back to that, the people I grew up with, especially the older people, they were happy. They were comfortable in their own life. They weren't stressed. They were not afraid of death. They understood what role they played in life, and they lived it authentically and with joy and grace. There was an ease by which they flowed through their lives. And that taught me when I was back in New York and the hecticness of this city, what we were missing. And that's where it was not in any book, any text, any scientific publication. It was just that we're not happy. Our happiness comes more often than not through what we do. So if we go to a play or a movie or someplace, oh, that's happiness. No, it's not. That doesn't mean that you can't find something joyful, but you have to be a happy person, then go to a movie or a play or a picnic or a concert, or walk in the park, and you take your happiness with you. You shouldn't go to some place thinking the destination will give me the happiness, I'll bring it back, and somehow I'll then be a happier person. I'll fill that void in my life. There is no void to fill. This whole idea that we have voids that fill them and preoccupy ourselves constantly by searching for something outside of ourselves to make us feel better inside is nonsense. So once I figured that out, then I brought together a program from that day on, and that was 1975. From that day on, everything I did in the way of helping people understand health and disease was that you had to start off equal to your diet and supplements and protocol had to be happiness. Now imagine what would be different in your life today, what choices you would not have made or would have made had you come from a happy, joyful, loving place. More often than not, we come from fear, insecurity, angst, anger, depression, anxiety. Disguised or not, when you make choices from that, you're making a dark side choice. It will never work to your advantage. So that said, now I look at this report from Keio University and in Tokyo, part of the University of Tokyo, and they're looking at people living over 100 and some over, just in Japan, they have over almost 48,000 people over 100. That's far more than the United States. But they actually have people living over 110. They had 78 people living over 110, and they're in good health. And they're looking at this, and the diet's important, but quality of life is even more important, where a person knows that each day when they wake up, they have a place in society that honors them, and they feel joy in that, the comfort of the larger family. That's what we're missing today in our society. Next up, vitamin C shows exercise benefits. This comes from the peer-reviewed journal Nutrition, and it says, the most important findings of the present study are the marked decreases in heart rate response during submaximal exercise and lower levels of general fatigue and the perception of effort reported in vitamin C participants compared with control participants at the end of the intervention report. Than at the University of Wisconsin, University of Arizona. What it means is that when you take vitamin C, you can exercise longer, your heart is protected better, you have more energy and endurance. That's good. So, vitamin C, after a good workout, and it'll help you. The omega-3 fatty acids can lower the heart failure risk by 15%, according to a major series of studies involving over 176,000 people in seven studies published in Clinical Nutrition. Here's what it says, that the omega-3 oils should be the first line of defense against heart disease death, end quote. How about that? The first line of defense? Do you see that anywhere on television? No, you see drugs that actually cause heart disease. Could you imagine if the Surgeon General and the U.S. Public Health Service starting tomorrow said, you want to prevent a heart attack? Want to prevent stroke? You want to have a healthier heart? Omega-3 fatty acids. For the vegans, you can get it from flaxseed and walnuts and avocado. For everyone else, get it from fish oil. And you can reduce your risk of heart failure by 15%. Well, just imagine if you're having about 600,000 people a year die, you're saving over 70,000 lives a year. That's a big deal if you're one of those 70,000 people. And finally, this is a study on beverages with green tea and hibiscus. And it says the following. Drinks containing green tea and hibiscus. By the way, I grow hibiscus. It's beautiful. Comes in orange and yellow and red flowers on this shrub. And iguanas love them. One of the best foods for iguanas. They were found to exhibit higher antioxidant activity than other beverages in a study conducted in Portugal. So, when you're taking your juices, whether it's grape juice, pomegranate juice, or green juice, make sure that you put some hibiscus and green tea extracts in there, and you'll get more from it. I'm Gary Noll, back in a moment. Please stay with us. By the way, think about it, just common sense. All over the world, the Republicans and corporate Democrats, which are most members of our Congress, and the White House certainly, are suggesting more austerity to solve our problems. Really? Well, let me just give a metaphor, see if this makes sense to you. Benjamin Rush, the first psychiatrist in the United States, and the one who would lead the entire psychiatric community, his face is what adorns the seal of the American Psychiatric Association today, used austerity on George Washington. He bled him, took out a lot of blood that was essential to the president. So a common cold, a simple inflammation of the lungs, became a death sentence. You don't take the blood out of economy. When you're asking people for austerity, you're asking them to take away their pensions, their minimum wage, their ability to earn a gainful employment. If you gave them that, and corporate profits could easily give them that, then you would have more money to circulate within the regular community. But this whole mantra now is austerity. Bad idea. And just remember George Washington as the example. Let's go over and say hello to my two guests who are standing by. Jonathan E. Mord. Jonathan is one of the nation's leading free speech attorneys. Jonathan, we need you on this network. On Free Speech Radio, I'm the only person that's ever had this free speech curtail. But that's all right. Hypocrisy reigns even in those sacred places where we pretend it doesn't. You have defeated the Food and Drug Administration in federal court more than any other American attorney. In fact, you've gotten the title of the FDA Dragon Slayer. And in 2007, you received the Cancer Control Society's Humanitarian Award for winning and preserving our great civil rights to life, liberty, and the health freedoms. I'm concerned about the FDA. I'm concerned about the power of tyranny that it is manifesting. I'm concerned about Michael Taylor from Monsanto, who is now ahead of the FDA's food safety panel. I'm concerned about the food safety laws that will, if applied, could put all the small and organic farmers out. I'm concerned about Codex Alimentarius morphing into the new legislative process in the United States where anything goes. If you are a powerful person and a lobbyist, you can get the FDA to say, we don't want anyone to have a right to have supplements. I'm concerned about this, but the mainstream media on the left and right have not even made this an issue. And yet the future health of probably one-third of the American population rests upon this issue. I'm going to ask you and Scott Tipps, who's also on the standby, and Scott Tipps is the General Counsel for the National Health Federation, the world's oldest health freedom organization protecting citizens' health rights. And, in fact, in 2007, he became its acting president as the organization's editor of their Health Freedom News. And he is a magna cum laude graduate of UCLA and studied the Sorbonne in Paris and got his Juris Doctorate at University of California, Berkeley Law School. So I want both of you to address what we don't know as a general citizenry about the FDA. We're taught that it's there to protect us, to help us keep from having bad things, dangerous things in our body. Tell us the truth about the FDA. We'll start with you, Jonathan.
Well, what most people don't realize is that when a drug is reviewed by the Food and Drug Administration, mm-hmm. the FDA does not conduct any independent testing of the drug. It relies on tests supplied by the party that has a conflict of interest in the interpretation of the results. That is, the drug company sponsor of the very drug is the party that is trusted to test the drug to determine its safety and efficacy. Most people don't realize that when a drug application is submitted to the FDA, that if the application itself does not raise safety issues, the FDA presumes no safety issues to exist. Most people don't realize that the game played by in the drug approval process is played only by the wealthiest state-sponsored monopolies in the world, because the typical cost of a new drug from discovery to final FDA approval exceeds $600 million, and the application filing fee is over $290,000, excluding anyone who would be a university-based person or an academic somewhere who discovered an agent that could treat disease successfully. In addition, most people don't realize that scientists don't make the decisions about safety and efficacy and drug approval at FDA, the ultimate decisions. Those decisions are made by political managers. Most people don't realize that the political managers at the FDA refer to the drug industry as the FDA's client. Most people don't realize that the FDA's own associate director of the Office of Drug Safety, David Graham, has said that the agency is biased in favor of the drug industry and will approve as many drugs as it can, regardless of whether they're safe or efficacious. Most people don't realize that the FDA very rarely, extremely rarely, removes a drug from the market or otherwise encumbers its marketing once it's approved, but rather defends it to the hilt. Most people don't realize that even in the presence of over 160,000 heart attacks from Vioxx and 60,000 deaths from heart attacks from Vioxx, that the FDA continued all the way until Merck itself withdrew the drug from the market under an avalanche of products liability suits, continued to defend the drug and even approved it 2 weeks before Merck withdrew it from the market for use in pediatric rheumatoid arthritis patients. In short, most people are unaware that both the FDA and the Congress of the United States is in the pockets of the drug industry. The Congress of the United States, almost every incumbent member, receives substantial financial contributions each campaign cycle from the lobbying institutions for the drug industry, most notably the Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers Association of America. And most people are unaware of the fact that the Obama administration, just like the Bush administration, has defended a provision in Medicare Part D that allows the drug industry to charge whatever it wants per drug unit to the federal government under Medicare Part D, with no power by the federal government to negotiate down the price of each drug, thus creating an opportunity for the drug industry to pillage the United States Treasury for its own financial benefit. So we have a very poisoned environment, a sick environment in which corruption reigns and integrity is virtually non-existent.
All right, Jonathan, thank you for the overview. Now I just have two specific questions for you. Would you consider it one of the most important issues of our time, the control of the source of our food, with the FDA supporting genetic engineering, saying that it's virtually equivalent to non-genetically engineered food, hence no need for studies of safety or a long-term outcome? Is that true or not, that the FDA is taking that position and has since day one?
Well, one of the principal problems with the FDA is that consumers are entitled to know whether food substances they consume contain genetically modified substances, if for no other reason than the inherent risk that occurs when genetically modified plants are grown and their pollen migrates from a genetically modified plant to another field that is supposed to be organic and thus contaminates the organic supply. People have a right to know so that they can exercise informed choice in the market. The FDA has been entirely derelict and completely beholden to the industry in its refusal to include labeling that alerts consumers to the presence of genetically modified ingredients. As a result, some 75% of vegetables sold in the marketplace today are genetically modified, and yet consumers are unaware of that. And so when a consumer would almost reliably choose a natural alternative to a genetically modified one, and yet time and again consumers are consuming foods thinking that they're simple fruits and vegetables unaffected by genetically modified ingredients, when in fact they have GMOs in them. This is separate and apart from the issue of whether GMOs actually cause injury. The point is simple at root, no pun intended, and that is, as a person who is in the marketplace, I have a right to receive information that I believe important in my exercise of choice, and that is compounded by the fact that if I'm denied the access to that information, then this migration of GMOs throughout the food supply directly or indirectly as a result of pollen transference of GMOs to non-GMO foods is a violation of my basic ability to control what I consume. If I don't know what I'm eating, because the government's blocking the information from having to be disclosed, I'm defrauded. And the government is a party to this defrauding activity. So at a minimum, even if you set aside the scientific debate, I, as a consumer, have a right to know whether a can of beans I pick up at the grocery store is comprised of genetically modified ingredients. And the FDA has stood four square against access to truthful information on that score to the American public.
Okay, a final question, short answer, please. Is it true that the FDA has become militarized to the point where an Amish farmer, having a simple order of raw milk taken across the state lines at the request of the FDA, but hidden, they didn't do it obviously, they did it as a setup, then had an entire armed SWAT team arrest this man, guns drawn?
That's true.
Okay. Boy, oh boy. And this is an agency that we've given unlimited power in the United States, and the Congress wants to give even more power. Thank you for your input, Jonathan E. Mord. And Jonathan E. Mord, his website is emord.com. And Jonathan, I will see you tomorrow in Chicago.
Sounds good, Gary. Look forward to it.
Scott Tipps. Why would the FDA be carrying on a 40-year war against supplements and legal, or I should say, completely scientifically legitimate claims that have been made? Why have they gone after people for saying that cherries are good for you, for, you know, reducing inflammation, when the scientific literature proves that walnuts are good because of the oils, but the scientific literature proves that? They're going after issues that are full of scientific valid claims, and yet they're saying it's a drug, and hence you can never make any health claim about any food if it's associated with the same thing that a drug would do. Hence, by their logic, you could never say eat your vegetables or fruits because they're good for you, because meaning good for you means that they are that you're making a claim. Therefore, you would have to say eat fruits and vegetables, but I can't tell you why. There's an absurdity here that escapes me of how they figure out the American public are so dumb or gullible that they wouldn't realize they're being had. Your thoughts?
Thank you, Gary. As typical, you have a knack for getting to the heart of an issue, and that's one of them right there, is why would the FDA do it, do something like this? You would think a public agency, most people would think a public agency would be on your side, on my side. But the truth of the matter is it really comes down to one word, captured. The FDA, along with every other government agency that exists, has been captured by the very interests, the very commercial interests, financial interests, you name it, that they are intended to regulate. And when you think about it, it makes perfect sense. This is inevitable. They will be captured, because to you and me, well, maybe to you and me it's a little different, but to the average person, the FDA just occupies a small percentage of their daily lives. You know, they have families to deal with, they have school to go to, work to deal with, you know, vacations to take, books to write, books to read, you name it. They have a whole list of things. The FDA probably occupies a half of a percent, if even that much, of their attention, of their focus, of their needs or desires. But to a drug company, it occupies 100%, because if they don't get that drug approved, and I love what Jonathan E. Moore just said. In fact, I wrote it down because I love it so much, where he said, we're talking about the wealthiest state-sponsored monopolies in the world, these drug companies. And that's exactly what they are. And people shouldn't lose focus of this duality that's involved here. It's not just the drug companies per se that are doing things bad. It's the drug companies in concert with the government. They derive their coercive power from this unholy alliance between the government and the drug companies. The government empowers the drug companies to do what they do. They can't do it on their own. No one forces you or me to go into Walmart and shop, but through laws that are passed, monopolistic laws and suppression of natural remedies, they force us to go in. And that's why the drug companies spend $6 million a day lobbying the halls of Congress and lobbying the agencies to get their way. And that's why the FDA turns and looks to the drug companies, not to you or me, not to the average person, to make the decisions that it does. And that's why they consider cherries and cherry pits to be dangerous. That's why they arrest this Amish farmer. That's why, and use SWAT teams and the like. And as the system is threatened, as this medical mafia monopolistic system is threatened, they're going to turn to more and more coercive means to stop you and I and to suppress this arising natural alternative health care that is there. That's why the job that you do, Gary, is so incredibly important, because you, along with some others, are getting the message out there that people need to hear. So I'm so glad you're doing that, and I'm so appreciative that you do that.
Well, last question for you, Scott. Thank you for that. What can the people in this audience that are all over the world and very concerned about their health, what can they do to challenge the power of the pharmaceutical medical industrial complex and the FDA? Because if we don't challenge them, then the right of the type and quality of foods that we will be offered will be gone. And then one day we'll wake up and only have genetically engineered processed foods to select from.
Well, they need to focus on changing things. They need to make this issue their focus. They need to be what I call persistently vocal. They need to, as much as we can, as much as a constitutional republic still remains, or even a democracy, if some want to call it that, we need to contact our representatives and let them know our views, let them know that these monopolistic practices, these suppressive laws that are always put in place because under the nuances of it's to protect the public, are not to be believed, that these people who are behind this are just doing it for their own selfish power interests, their own selfish commercial interests and the like. And we need to expose and make known to the public that these agencies are not working for our benefit. And that's part of what you're doing, which I appreciate. That's part of what the National Health Federation is doing as well. And they need to contact their representatives, both in the Senate and the others, and then vote these scoundrels out who don't go their way, whether it's Senator Dick Durbin, whether it's Dianne Feinstein, Barbara Bouncer, Boxer, I think she's actually called. No, well, Bouncer, because she used to bounce so many checks when she was in the House of Representatives. But in any event, these people need to be contacted repeatedly, get groups of people, go down there, put pressure on them, because politicians don't see the light, they just feel the heat. So the heat has to be applied, and it has to be applied steadily, consistently, and over a period of time, I think we can change things this way. But if we aren't able to change them this way, then who knows what will happen, because this is a conflagration that is just being suppressed right now. And if people aren't allowed to have the peaceful change that they need, then something's going to happen. You're going to start having more of these Occupy Wall Street type movements and the like. Not that those were not peaceful, but, you know, still there is a process by which people can undertake to make their grievances known, and they need to do that, and they need to insist upon their rights. So when they write their congressman, they need to also pick up the phone and call. They need to write an email. They need to go down with friends and pay a visit to the district office.
I agree with you, Scott, and I agree with Jonathan, but I also believe at this point we have tipped. We have tipped into tyranny, fascism, and become a police state where they fear. We would look, common sense. Scott, we wouldn't have a National Defense Authorization Act. We wouldn't have the right of one individual to decide who he wants to arrest and kill, torture, or render into a state where no one will know where they're at, unless they feel threatened, not by terrorists. Yeah. That's the false flag on this. But by people actually finally standing up and saying, we're no longer going to have you take the power away from us and use it against us. So I believe that we, at the same time you can write a legislator, which you should also take your money out of their bank, stop buying their food, stop buying their clothes, stop watching their television programs, stop supporting their sponsors, their commercials, stop electing their politicians. When we do that, then we are sending them an even stronger message. We're taking back the power.
Gary, I couldn't agree with you more, and actually the part about the political process is just one part of what NHF focuses on, because we do believe you should shop amongst yourselves. You don't buy products from them. So I'm in total agreement with you on that aspect. That is a very important component as well.
Well, all the best to you and the National Health Federation. The website is the NHF.com. NHF.com. By the way, he is the author of Codex Alimentarius, Global Food Imperialism. Thanks a lot, Scott Tipps.
Thank you, Gary, so much. And good luck to you, too.
Thank you. Now, we're going to take on some issues. One of the issues I'll take on in a few minutes is I'm very concerned that the American public and the American media, working hand in glove, are preparing us for the inevitability of Israel invading Iran. And I believe that we are being led by the same ideologues and the same corporate interest, because of what they see they could gain if they took back Iran. I do not believe for a second they care about the consequences. So I will give you some information today of one more reason that you should pause before you assume that everything you've been told about why we should invade Iran is true. That'll be coming. But first we want to say hello to Lou Ann Panessi, who's on the line to share questions from people in the audience. Hi, Lou Ann.
Hello, Gary. I hope that the people in your audience heard last night's show, by the way, because it goes hand in glove with what we're talking about today. I know it was over 3 hours. You might want to do it in chunks.
3.5 hours.
3.5 hours.
Everyone from Dennis Kucinich and Ralph Nader on the first hour from 6 to 7, Mitchell J. Rabins. Then we had the independent candidates for the Green Party, Jill Stern. We had Rocky Anderson on. We had the different people representing independent views, and at least 80% of all they talked about, they were in agreement with. And I asked each one. I said to the Libertarian Party candidate, I said, look, take off the bottom part of the libertarian philosophy and replace with the humanistic and spiritual philosophy, and you've got a powerful, powerful commitment to social change. I told Rocky Anderson, I said, look, after this election cycle, work together as one, and you'll have greater strength than you do separately. I believe that will happen. So it's worth listening to the Progressive Commentary Hour. It's a catalog now. It's on our archives. People can go and listen to the Progressive Commentary Hour, and they listen to 3.5 hours of insight of how to correct all the wrongs in our society. We went over everything that was important that you never hear in any of the other media, and boy, did they nail it. So thank you for bringing that to our attention.
No one's ever coalesced those three groups into one show, Gary, not to my knowledge anyway. It was brilliant. My question today, we have some people that have been emailing on a common theme. We've spoken a lot about derivatives, the whole concept of derivatives, and people are saying, well, now that it looks like the stock market is going up, people are saying, oh, it's a good thing, and of course, you know, you see it for what it really is. People are asking, could you just give us a simple explanation again of what the derivative market is? What is that all about?
Let me put it into a larger context, because I actually was going to do a commentary tomorrow on this, and I will incorporate some of Professor Paul Craig Roberts' thoughts on this, my own. But in this context, we've been led to believe that, boy, isn't it great, we dodged a bullet when $125 billion was given to Spain's banks to bail them out. And now doesn't that help? No, it doesn't help anything. All it does is help keep those banks a little bit solvent for another 3 or 4 weeks, but it doesn't change the underlying problem. They keep wanting every one of these countries, Italy, Spain, Portugal, Lithuania, and Ireland, and to go through a severe austerity. I believe that's absolutely backwards, because who's getting the money when you give $125 billion to Spain? Are they going to put it into people's pockets by giving them a higher working wage? Are they going to hire more people for, let's say, helping to restart their housing market so people can have a home? Not at all. Most of that money will go right to the banks to pay off the debt of the banks. The same way with most of what happens in Greece. The money goes to Greece, but it goes into, it was $163 billion. It went into the Greek banking system to pay for its interest on the country's debt. So the Greek economy got zip, but the banks then got their rollback of money. So in effect, the gamblers, the high-stakes players, they're giving money to a country to give back to them. But it doesn't filter down to the people. And so that's the first rule that you got to understand. Rarely does money given when it's involving finance ever come actually help anyone. Now, the bigger problem in the world today, the biggest problem I can see in the world today, is the entire world economy is based upon a bubble, a giant bubble. It's a derivative bubble, and I believe it's going to collapse in the next 12 months. I believe we'll start seeing it. I believe that we'll see Greece first, and then I think Italy, which is up at $1.7 trillion in debt, is coming up there because they're asking Italians, cut back your jobs, cut back your pensions, cut back your minimum wage. They're not going to do that. And all these countries have got politicians who've been bought and sold who will say, yes, we will, and then it's not going to happen. In the United States, Bill Clinton and the corporate Democrats and Hillary Clinton, who is along on all these decisions, remember that when she becomes, in the next election cycle, the lead to be the president, they fought for financial deregulation. And they got Phil Gramm, a Republican from Texas, and they completely destroyed the Glass-Steagall Act and the Commodities Future Trading Act. So anything you wanted to do, you could do. If you wanted to, if you had $1 and you wanted to loan $80 against $1, you could just print it. We had total deregulation, and it's dangerous. There's always going to be adverse consequences. First of all, deregulation has allowed the financial concentration that produces the banks too big to fail. Hence, the general public has to absorb all the cost of the bank's mistakes and reckless gambling. But ask this, Luann, were the public given any backstop by the Federal Reserve? The Federal Reserve is pumping $16 trillion with the full knowledge of the president and the Treasury Secretary, who had come from Goldman Sachs, to Goldman Sachs, hundreds of billions of dollars, to Chase Manhattan, Citigroup, Bank America. What did they do with that? They went on buying sprees. They gave humongous bonuses. They bought up competition. Did any of that actually stop a home from being foreclosed on? Not a single home in America was stopped in foreclosure because of this administration or these banks or this program for helping out. Instead, they went into deregulation derivative mode. Now, deregulation allows virtually every financial institution to sweep aside the position limits on speculators and to dominate commodity markets. Hence, when the price of oil went from $47 to $147 a barrel, that had nothing to do with supply and demand. It had everything to do with manipulating the markets. And Citigroup and Bank of America were behind that, and Goldman Sachs. So what happens is, if you have enough money or you have the right to go and borrow money at zero interest, then you can control any economy. You can control the price of wheat and soybeans and gasoline. You become a gambling casino where that deck is fixed. And that's going to drive up the prices for energy and food. But you have never had to buy a gallon of oil. You've never had to buy a bucket of corn. But you make sure that everyone who does pays you for it. Now, deregulation permits financial institutions to sell naked shorts, which means to sell a company stock or gold or silver bullion that the seller does not possess into the market in order to drive down the price. What is my opinion? My opinion is that for the last 2 years, you have had massive manipulation of the price of gold and silver by people who did not actually own the gold and silver, but had put positions and then shorted it to keep the prices down. What do I personally believe the price of silver would be if there was no manipulation? $1,000 an ounce. And gold, $5,000 an ounce. That's what I believe any reasonable person who understands the prices of these commodities would be if they weren't being manipulated. And that's something that no one in the media has yet looked at. But look at the manipulation of gold and silver, and you'd see where it is, instead of being kept down artificially low. The dollar in its role as world reserve currency is about to end, but it's the entire source of Washington's power. Let me say that again. I believe that the dollar as a reserve currency is gone. I believe that China, the BRIC nations, and the South American nations are going to move to other currencies. So you're going to be standing, if you have mortgages, you have debt, you're dead financially. You've got debt and small amount of dollars. The dollars are going to be worth less, but it's going to cost more to buy anything. So that goes to the power of Washington. It allows Washington to control the international payment system and to exclude from the financial system those countries that do not do Washington's bidding. It allows Washington to print money with which to pay its bills and to purchase the cooperation of foreign governments or to fund opposition within those countries whose governments Washington is unable to purchase, such as Iran, Russia, China, etc., in Venezuela. If the dollar was not the world reserve currency and actually reflected the true depreciated value from the mounting U.S. debt and running of the printing presses, Washington's power would simply be zero, because your dollar would be worth nothing. It'd be worth 3 cents on the dollar. So if you think we're headed off a cliff, we are. If you think we're headed towards the big bang in economics, we are. We've been living by smoke and mirrors, all because the Federal Reserve has not acknowledged, nor the President nor Congress, that we are the most indebted percentage to gross domestic product. We're at about 400% debt. Greece is only about 180%. So all these others have less debt to their gross domestic product. We are the worst of all. And every time we print money, we are diluting the value of the dollar. So the U.S. dollar has come close to its demise several times recently. In 2011, the dollar value dropped as low as 72 Swiss cents. Investors seeking safety for the value of their money flooded into Swiss francs, pushing the value of the franc so high that Switzerland's exports began to suffer. So then you got down, and prior to the sovereign debt crisis in Europe, the dollar also faced a run-up in the value of the euro as the foreign central banks and OPEC members shifted their reserves into euros from dollars. The euro was on its way to becoming an alternative reserve currency. However, Goldman Sachs, whose former employees dominate the U.S. Treasury and the financial regulatory agencies, and also the European Central Bank, and the governments of Italy and indirectly Greece, helped the Greek government to disguise its true deficit, thus deceiving the private European banks who were purchasing the bonds of the Greek government. And once the European sovereign debt crisis was launched, Washington had an interest in keeping it going, and it sends holders of euros fleeing into the so-called safe dollars, thus boosting the exchange value of the dollar despite the enormous rise in Washington's own debt and the doubling of the U.S. money supply. Now, last year, gold and silver were rapidly rising in price, measured in U.S. dollars, with gold hitting 1,900 an ounce and on its way to 2,000, when suddenly short sales began dominating the bullion market, and the naked shorts on gold and silver bullion succeeded in driving the price of gold down $350 per ounce from its peak. And many thought, well, gee whiz, that's not good, but they didn't know the market was being played. Now we come to the whole idea of derivatives. And that's where you got to be very careful, because the positions of the major banks, Goldman Sachs, the top four banks in America, if anything happens in that international market in derivatives, they could be wiped out. And guess who's going to backstop that to pay for it? The United States taxpayer, through the Federal Reserve, as we have in the past. So we are the most financially irresponsible country on the planet. Zimbabwe, you know, is a better example than our U.S. Treasury. And if we had to pay the actual rate for and allow inflation to exist at a normal rate, it would be so high that this administration, any of its politicians, would be thrown out. So I believe that we only have one course of action: ban all derivatives and credit default swaps. We get rid of all fractionalized banking except for 6-to-1. You can loan $6 for each one. There was a time when they were loaning 40-to-1, 60-to-1. And that's how they played the game. That's why they deregulated the oversight. That's why they didn't want any regulations. We got to reestablish the Glass-Steagall Act and stop these people from their criminal activity. And indeed, Luann, it is a criminal activity. Hope that answers that question.
Sure does, Gary. Thank you.
For those of you who want to continue listening, when we go off the regular stations, you can call and listen over the telephone at 832-280-0066, 832-280-0066. And let's now go over and say hello to Paul. Hi, Paul, from Staten Island.
Yeah, hi, Gary.
Yeah.
Isn't it better to... if you have debt, you're paying in cheaper dollars. Why is it bad to have debt if the dollar collapses?
Well, you don't want debt because how are you going to repay the debt? And first, if you got rid of the Federal Reserve and allowed the U.S. Treasury to print and distribute dollars, then they could do it at zero interest. Currently, we're paying $500 billion in interest. We wouldn't have that interest to pay. So that's one thing we could save enormous amounts of money.
I mean, as an individual, if we have debt like a mortgage and...
If you have debt, you have to anticipate that there's going to be a turndown, the turndown in the value of the dollar. So how are you going to repay your debt if the debt stays the same, but the value of the dollar you're repaying the debt is diminished by 10, 20, or 30%? You're going to go broke. Separately, you have to count upon savings. I'd like to see people saving more. And I would rather see people go through a structured bankruptcy than start to save money and not buy anything. You shouldn't be buying anything right now. You should be saving. And it's the savings that's going to get you through. Why do you think so many people in the Great Depression survived? Because they had 20 and 30% savings. So therefore, year after year, they only purchased what they needed. They were able to work in communities and co-ops and fair exchange and barters. And they were very prudent. Our generation felt that why save anything when we can finance everything? And that cost of financing without having a stable return and consistent is what crippled us. And that's what's hurting so many people today. So debt is not a good thing. I don't suggest that we have the debt.
Yeah, I agree with you. Debt is like enslavement.
Yeah, you are. And we are debt enslaved. But the banks want you to miss your payments, because the moment you miss a payment, then up goes the interest rates. Okay, thank you. In studio real quick with me, I just saw him come in, is Larry. Larry is one of the nutritionists that I hire. I have a whole bunch of them from Albert Einstein School of Medicine, Yeshiva University, New York University, Columbia University. Where'd you graduate from?
I graduated from Brooklyn College, Gary.
Okay. And these people all have their background and degrees in nutrition and are dietitians. And they work for you for free. I pay them a very nice salary. They are living. They have a living wage or better. And the idea is that I can't help everyone personally. I see as many people as I can, but I see terminally ill people. And there's more than enough for me to see. So everyone else who has any kind of question in health and wants to know what is a way to eat healthier and what do I do, what's my diet if I have diabetes, high blood pressure, then Larry and the other nutritionists help you. And they give you quality time. You don't have to buy anything. It's just a free service. Hi, Larry.
Hi, Gary. Thanks for having me on. My name's Larry Hubble, registered dietitian. I have an MS in nutrition. I'm very fortunate to have been involved with your work, Gary, for over 10 years as a participant and also as an observer and doing evaluations of your health support groups and always seeing very remarkable results in others and myself as well.
What are the conditions you've been able to see turn around in people you've counseled?
I've seen very good results with people having great improvements in their blood sugar.
Diabetes?
Yes. Also in arthritis.
Pain?
Well, yes.
Inflammation?
And inflammation. People working with blood pressure and cholesterol also have had good results.
Two big major killers in our society.
Yes, they are. And I like what you say. It's not about finding a diet plan so much as finding what honors the body in terms of nutrition and lifestyle that we can help others with. And we have very good nutritionists working at the store, Nadia, Shoshona, and myself.
Great. Well, then we're out of time. But if you would like, anyone listening now would like to have Larry help you with your health regimen, and it's free, public service, call him, Larry Hubble, at 212-874-4000. 212-874-4000. Larry, thanks for dropping by.
Thanks, Gary.
I'm Gary Null. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a good day, everyone.